Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Family Medicine, a CME podcast series where each week we translate today's late-breaking clinical research and news into tomorrow's practice. I'm Dr. Frank Domino, professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the University of Massachusetts Chan Medical School and editor-in-chief of the 5-Minute Clinical Consult. This podcast is brought to you by PrimeMed. You are seeing Louise, and she's caring for her 73-year-old husband, who's developed some early signs of Alzheimer's dementia. She's asking us whether medication might be helpful. You ponder how best to respond, as the drugs on the market do not seem to provide much benefit for the disease, but you want to give Louise some hope. Hi, this is Frank Domino, and joining me today is Dr. Robert Baldor, professor and the founding chair from the Department of Family Medicine at the UMass Chan Medical School, Bay State, in Springfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Bob.
Morning, Frank. Good to be here again.
Thank you. Dementia. Treating dementia is a difficult question, and patients continue to look for some success. There was quite a bit in the news recently because a drug was recently approved, an anti-amyloid monoclonal antibody for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease. But now it looks like it's being pulled off the market. Can you catch me up on this?
Yes, Frank. You know, I believe we talked about this drug a little while back, and when I presented angiocanamide, it's an anti-amyloid monoclonal antibody. And I had considerable concerns about efficacy and safety. And it appears that concerns were shared by others as Biogen announced it was no longer marketing the drug and it had ended the ENVISION clinical study that was required to be completed for final FDA approval. It was originally approved via the FDA accelerated approval process. By the way, just to be clear, Biogen stated the decision was not related to concerns over safety and efficacy. It was more that this drug had very poor sales, looking at the sales are really not very high, and that they said that their decision was not a pullback from the market, but rather a decision to redirect their efforts to lecanemide, which is another FDA-approved monoclonal antibody. And it's interesting, though, about the same time, there was a systematic review that was published in the Annals of Family Medicine that attempted to understand the benefits and harm of these treatments for Alzheimer's disease. So, Frank, I was surprised. There's actually 8 anti-amyloid antibodies that are out there, and they reviewed 19 publications with over 23,000 total participants here. Now, what they found in looking at the use of these antibodies is that there were small improvements over placebo in the various cognitive assessment scales used. However, none of the changes were considered to have made a minimal clinical important difference, MCID. Now, it's interesting because the FDA has stated that therapy should be approved if they meet this MCID, minimal clinical important difference. We'll probably be hearing more about that term perhaps in the future. It's almost in my mind a little bit the difference between clinical significance versus looking at a measure where they can see the amyloid deposits dropping, but is there really a clinical significance in that? The other part of the review, of course, was they said harms included significantly increased risk of amyloid-related cerebral hemorrhage, number needed to harm 13, and symptomatically related cerebral edema, number needed to harm 86. They concluded that monoclonal antibodies targeting amyloid did not provide a clinically meaningful benefit while being associated with significant harms, and oh, by the way, a very high cost.
Yep. I'm disappointed too. I was hoping that we were on the verge of something that's going to be fantastic for Alzheimer's dementia. And this certainly increases the risk of harm dramatically. So we don't have a magic bullet yet. That's disappointing. And our older agents, while safer and certainly less expensive, things like donepezil, don't appear to provide much clinically meaningful benefit either. I did read something recently about liver disease. Can you catch me up there?
Yeah, that was an interesting study. The authors completed a cohort study, including over 177,000 veterans with a diagnosis of dementia. And they actually went looking for coexisting liver disease. And they found that those with a high fibrosis 4 score, which was suggestive of advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis, was observed in up to 10% of those patients who previously did not have a diagnosis of cirrhosis. So they raised an interesting question as to whether associated hepatic encephalopathy is a significant contributor to overall cognitive impairment. And of course, we know that hepatic encephalopathy is related to sort of brain function. So it really made me think about, we should be thinking about this diagnosis more when we have patients that are presenting with cognitive decline. The fibrosis 4 score, by the way, is for somebody who has underlying liver disease, and you measure their AST, ALT, and platelet levels to come up with a score. But part of this, as they were mentioning hepatic encephalopathy, I was wondering, I don't know, should we be checking ammonia levels in these patients that we're seeing?
You know, it's a good question. I've certainly, when I saw this paper, I raised it with my liver specialist friends, and they pretty much said no. They say, you know, the testing of ammonia is horribly nonspecific and nonsensitive. And instead, if they have significant fibrosis or cirrhosis and dementia, try an empiric trial. What do you think about an empiric trial? I recently tried a patient with fatty liver disease and dementia, and I just recently started him on lactulose. Would you go that route?
Yeah, you know, I kind of like that idea. Again, we don't have a lot in our armamentarium to use, so I like the idea of empiric trial of an inexpensive, relatively safe therapy like lactulose. So that would be something to really try. And again, we're talking about people with coming in cognitive decline, underlying liver disease. Absolutely, we should be having this a little bit more on the top of our minds. We'll have to wait until some trials actually come out there to sort of say, are we going to see a benefit or not? But at least this trial raises the question. We should be looking at these things. And so, Frank, talking about inexpensive measures, the last study I wanted to quickly touch upon was a study that was published here in JAMA Neurology. And they looked at physical activity, and it's associated with cognitive decline and dementia. So again, another cohort study was, I love these studies that people, you know, think about and come up with. They used autopsy data from 754 individuals who had a diagnosis of dementia. By the way, the average age was 90, plus or minus 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So they looked at this, and they had data, they had data on lifestyles, cognitive status from standardized testing, and of course they had their post-mortem neuropathologic data. And so they had analysis of beta amyloid, tau tangles, vascular changes, Lewy bodies, and other dementia markers. And they actually found, they came up with a lifestyle score rated 1 to 5. And that was based on reports of smoking, the physical activity, did they actually exercise for at least 150 minutes per week or less, alcohol consumption, adherence to a Mediterranean DASH style diet. So what they found was, I suppose not unsurprisingly, higher lifestyle scores, meaning improved lifestyle, were associated with better global cognitive function regardless of the underlying disease process, all right? So it didn't matter whether somebody had Alzheimer's or vascular dementia or Lewy body dementia, they actually found increase in their cognitive function. So of course they concluded that healthy lifestyle probably provides a cognitive reserve, and this helps to maintain your abilities in the face of underlying dementia-related pathologies.
I think with this podcast, we should release a sign we can hang in the office that says, if you're worried about dementia, exercise and eat right. It's probably the most effective way to prevent the onset of dementia. I love this. Everything about that paper makes me happy except the limited alcohol, but we'll go over that another day. Bob, thanks for discussing these things. The hepatic encephalopathy sounds interesting. I hope it pans out, but the exercise and healthy lifestyle sound terrific. I appreciate you covering this topic so well in such a short period of time.
Thanks, Frank. And just quickly, one we had to discuss briefly, and I think it has been discussed elsewise, if you want to recommend patients taking something, a multivite looks like it has a benefit, another inexpensive, relatively safe medication. Practice pointer. Encourage all patients with any concern for cognitive decline to pursue a healthy lifestyle. Avoid tobacco, limit alcohol, follow a Mediterranean DASH style diet, and exercise for at least 150 minutes per week. Consider the possible influence of hepatic encephalopathy in those with comorbid liver disease.
Join us next time while we talk about the role of colchicine in the secondary prevention of heart disease. Thank you for listening to Frankly Speaking About Family Medicine, brought to you by PrimeMed. To claim CME credit and receive additional information about the article referenced in today's episode, follow the link in the description. To stay up to date on the most recent clinical research and news, please subscribe to Frankly Speaking About Family Medicine and be sure to check out PrimeMed.com for additional CME content.